Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Steve Jones Show on a Thursday afternoon. Hi, everybody. Chad Hirschberger with you in the producer chair, filling in for Sean Carey this afternoon. Steve will be along shortly in the Sunbury Motors studio.
And Absolutely.
Chad, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Steve?
Doing great. Doing great. We have a lot going on in today's show.
We do. That's what I was just going to say. A lot packed into the next 2 hours.
Yes. I mean, that's us. That's how we do things. We pack everything into 2 hours, and then we go from there. It's make a couple trips down to Mobile, the Citrus Bowl. I'm sorry, the Senior Bowl taking place, the 70th annual Senior Bowl, which has a couple of Penn State participants in it: quarterback Trace McSorley and defensive back Amani Oyewariye. Seriously, I don't think I ever told this story, the football banquet. You have to introduce, the player along with their parents. And, it's my job as the MC to do that. So I get, of course, to Amani. And I mention Amani's mom, and I mention, and escorted by his mom. I want to say his mom's name is Janice. Oyewariye, Penn State defensive back, Amani Oyewariye. Everybody applauds. Okay. Great. When we're done, James and I were sitting next to each other. He leans over to me. He says, "I promise you I'm not going to recruit another name like that again for you." And I said, if the dude can play, I said, I don't care. As long as the guy can play. And Amani could play. Simply as simple as that.
And after you learn how to pronounce his name, no problem.
Well, what I do is, it's very simple what I do. I just walk up and ask them. I've always told the Adrian Amos story. Remember when Adrian Amos was here, everybody called him Amos? Remember that? Adrian Amos. Mm-hmm. Everybody called him. TV guys called him Amos. Coaches called him Amos. So in his freshman year, he was still in training camp. And I could tell right away that Adrian was going to play. You could just tell he was one of those guys who was on the track, he was going to play. So he was standing in the loading dock. The loading dock's not there anymore. They've changed that area a bit. But he was standing in what was then the loading dock at the back of Lash. So I was getting ready to pull out of the parking lot, and I parked the car, and I walked up to the loading dock. I said, "Adrian, let me ask, can I ask you a question?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "I hear everybody pronouncing your name Amos. Is that how you say your last name, Amos, or is it Amos like famous Amos cookies, because it's A-M-O-S? And he starts shaking his head. He looks at me, and he says, "It's Amos, like famous Amos cookies." I said, "Well, where did they come up with the Amos thing?" He says, "I don't know." He says, "Somebody was trying to be funny. Now everybody thinks that's my name." So I pronounced it correctly all 4 years he was here. You notice that, like, when Al Michaels has him on, they called him Adrian Amos, because that is how you pronounce his name. I mean, even one as simple as that, I had to ask. Hey, sometimes you have to. Okay, let's see. I believe guess-wise we got Chris Trapasso today from CBS Sports. Does that line up with what you have? Let's see. Mark Wogan, Rich Allentown Morning Call.
That's what I was told.
And Keith Sargent from NJ.com.
I also was told Dave from the Washington Post.
Ah, yes, we got
Sheenan?
That one, too.
Is that how you say that? Sheenan?
Shylin. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, what we'll do is I'll get a hold of Keith. I'll put Keith on tomorrow's show. We'll do that. So we'll get to Dave. In fact, we'll get to Dave in the next half hour and talk with him. And then we'll shift gears to the Senior Bowl with Chris Trapasso and with Mark Wogenrich. I'll get a general feel from Chris about the Senior Bowl and what he's seeing. And then we're going to lock in on Trace and Amani with Mark Wogenrich. So that's how we'll take care of that. And we'll talk about baseball tomorrow and get some other items to take care of tomorrow on the show. Chad, if I recall, when we had Santa on, that your children were going to be on, correct?
That is correct. They were on 17th of December, I believe.
So what was the experience like?
Oh, it was great. They had a good time. As a matter of fact, my son, he'll be six in March.
Nice.
He's a chip off the old block. He wanted to take the microphone and take over the show from Miss Ann. So.
Uh-oh, a coup d'etat. Very nice. Penn State dismissed early today. Did you know that?
I did not know that. That's funny that they did, because my wife and I were just talking the other day, and I said the only time I remember in my 4 years at Penn State that we did not have class was when the governor declared a state of emergency and nobody could travel. Otherwise, we were trekking across campus.
Yeah, I think what they did was they looked at the weather. Now, we're down to about 32, 33 here right now. They closed class at 12:30 today, and faculty and staff were sent home at 1. Now, this does bring with it some emotional baggage for some people, too, you know. I mean, imagine finding out at this particular point in life that you were considered, quote, non-essential personnel. You wake up every day thinking you're essential. And then the university tells you you're not. Sorry, you're not essential personnel. It's time to go home. Then there are others like myself that like happily take the mantle and go, yeah, it's fine. Okay, I'm out of here. So, yeah, they closed it down. And I think what they're concerned about. We've had nearly an inch of rain here overnight into this morning. And with the inch of rain here, I think they were concerned with this front coming through, a rapid freeze with all the standing water. And I think they felt it was best for everybody that they give everybody a chance to get home while the temperatures were above, probably above 34, 35 at the time to get a lot of people to get home. So I think that's what they are. That was the goal. So yeah, they're done for the day.
Yeah, it's a little warmer over here. We're about 36, 37. I did hear that in Sunbury, there's some flooding and the Hamilton underpass is closed. So I'll check in with the newsroom to see if they heard that. But I did hear that this afternoon.
Yeah, so just be aware of it. You know, a rapid freeze is going to bring with it the possibility of suddenly, boom, ice, and in particular, black ice. Road looks normal, and black ice. So just be aware of that as you drive around the area. And, you know, we'll keep you company as you go through the day. But again, that is the depressing part. When you are told in no uncertain terms, in reality, you are non-essential. It doesn't go over big. That doesn't go over big at all. Okay, a couple of notes for you along the way. Victor Oladipo's season is over. Got hurt last night. Ruptured quad tendon. Not good. The Let's see. Tiger is back today at the Farmers Open, where John Rahm is at 7-under par through 10. let's see. Chelsea leads Tottenham 1-0 first half. And those are some of the news and notes moving forward. We're going to talk a lot of football today. A lot about the Senior Bowl going on today.
Yeah, I saw yesterday where Saquon Barkley was standing up for Trace McSorley a little bit.
Trace has actually done okay down there. It's not as if Trace has done poorly. Trace, you know, it's interesting. I had somebody say to me earlier today, well, imagine how people felt when they saw that Trace was actually 6 feet tall. And I said, well, I know how tall I am. I mean, I've told people for years he was 6 feet tall. Now, the difference is, obviously, I get a lot more of a chance to stand next to him than most people do. But, I mean, I knew that. Well, we'll get a read from Chris Trapasso and from Mark Wogenrich on how Trace is doing down there, along with Amani. Amani is going to be the guy that has the outside chance of being a first-day guy. And because he has the chance of being a first-day guy, he's getting obviously a lot of scrutiny. At one point, he did have to leave the field today and then went right back into the next drill, so he's fine. So we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us on the show today. Dave Schallen is going to join us from the Washington Post in the next half hour. We'll talk to him about the Baseball Hall of Fame and also about the state of baseball now heading into... there's still several key free agents that have not signed yet. Bryce Harper and Manny Machado being the two critical ones at this point. Craig Kimbrell hasn't signed yet with anybody. So that's why we'll talk to him about that and more. Then Chris Trapasso is going to join us from CBSSports.com. He's at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. Final half hour with Mark Wogenrich, Allentown Morning Call, who's also at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. So we have a lot going on the show today and tomorrow. For the most part, slow day.
Yeah, I got that impression when I was looking up our play-by-play call of the day. There wasn't too much to choose from today.
Right, I know. Yeah, it was slow. Just... hey, you're going to hit days like that where it's slow. That's fine. I'm not really that worried about it. But we have the guests to cover today and talk about a wide variety of things. Penn State, by the way, did add in some non-conference games. UMass in football and as well as basketball. And Ohio University. I think Ohio University is first. I want to say they're in 22 and UMass is in 23. The UMass thing will also coincide with a home and away. And people are like, oh, you know, Ohio University, UMass. Okay, I understand. But, these are not, that's not the, that is not the pivotal home and away spot they're filling. That's the get to seven game spot that they're filling. Keep in mind, there is a very simple formula on how this works. And it's based around the Big Ten schedule. When you have an odd year, you have to play all three of your non-conference games at home, because in an odd year, Penn State's playing four conference games at home. When it's an even year, Penn State is playing five conference games at home, which means they can play two of the three non-conference games at home, which gives them the option of playing one on the road. So you do have to be able to fill in that schedule, because seven home games is critical financially to everything Penn State does. You know, the money they get from ticket revenue, television, radio, all for basketball is critical to what they do. Seven home games in football is also critical to what they do. And the Ohio University and UMass games fill those spots. UMass is going to be a little bit later in the year when they played them in 23. And I think it's going to be a November 11th game. But that's because Penn State's playing Purdue at the front of the schedule. Penn State's got a couple of schedules in which they open the season with Big Ten games. One's with Wisconsin in a couple of years, and then they open with Purdue in 23. That's how they open the season with a Big Ten game. That's why you've got that spot later in the year that's open. So you're going to get a lot of, oh, why are they playing these teams? They're playing these teams so that you can have a wrestling program. They're playing these teams so you can have a volleyball program. They're playing these teams so you can have a baseball program. They're playing these teams so you can have a lacrosse program. That's why they're playing these teams.
And did I see that, is it next year? The Ohio State game is late in November, I believe.
Yes, it is the next to last game of the regular season.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. That's something new.
Yeah, I don't recall them ever playing them that well, actually.
Yeah, I've only remembered late October, early November.
Yeah, but you know what, Chris, or Chad, they played Ohio State in 2011 late as the next to last game. Because that was the week we found out that, remember, Penn State had played Nebraska. Joe had been relieved of his duties. They played Nebraska, and then Penn State went to Ohio State, and that's when everybody found out Joe had cancer. Remember that?
Oh, that's right.
Right. In fact, Penn State won the game. As a matter of fact, Tom Bradley did a great job with the team that week in particular.
I remember the Nebraska game. I was at that game.
Right. But Penn State played Ohio State the week after, and then they played Wisconsin out in Madison after that. So they have played them that late before. But when you see these schedules put out and you see they're going to play Ohio University, they're going to play UMass, and again, the UMass thing will coincide with a basketball home and away. You know the irony? All those games at UMass I've done in my lifetime because of all, you know, I did 9 years of the Atlantic 10. I have never done a game in the Mullen Center. They built that right after Penn State left. So I've done games at UMass at Curry Hicks Cage, which is where Julius Erving played, and at the Springfield Civic Center, but I've never done a game at the Mullen Center. So they'll do a home and away in basketball with UMass in conjunction with the football game at Ohio University. But again, why are they playing these games? Well, they're playing these games because they're trying to get to seven home games. Seven home games are critical because of the money that is needed to take care of other programs at the university and in the athletic department. Simple as that. And here's the other part. Let's be realistic about it, too. The college football playoff is, you know, to me, part of their job is to send messages as to what to do. They've sent messages left and right that you can schedule anybody non-conference you want. They don't care.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Mark Lawrence, great shows as always, every morning. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In just a few moments, Dave Scheinlein will join us from the Washington Post. We'll talk about baseball and the Hall of Fame. Later in the show, we will talk with Chris Trapasso from CBSSports.com at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. And Mark Wogenrich will join us from the Allentown Morning Call. A couple quick notes for you. Free agent outfielder A.J. Pollock has signed a free agent deal, a four-year deal to play for the Dodgers. Total value $55 million, fifth-year option for $10 million. John Rahm, 7-under par through 11 at the Farmers Insurance Open on the debut of Tiger Woods. And Woods is playing later, I believe. And Victor Oladipo is now out for the season, ruptured quad tendon. For the Indiana Pacers. Boy, that's a tough one. Heck of a player. All right, let's get to baseball. Bringing Dave Scheinlein from the Washington Post, because I believe the Post has a policy on not revealing votes. But Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this so everyone understands. It would be unfair of me to ask Dave whom he voted for this reason. The Washington Post does not want people to release whom their people vote for. So I want to be fair to Dave ahead of time so everyone understands that. But the four guys that got in, what were your – and two of them have local ties. Mike Messina's coaching basketball up in Montoursville, 60 miles from here. And Braden Halliday, Roy's son, is signed a letter of intent to pitch baseball here at Penn State starting next year. So there's local ties. Tell me what you think of the four that got in.
Well, let me first of all say that it's not that the Post doesn't let us reveal our votes, it's that the Post doesn't let us vote, period.
Okay.
So I have a Hall of Fame vote, I just don't ever vote.
I gotcha.
And this, you know, I mean, I guess this sounds a bit like a cop-out, but because I don't have that vote, I don't put in the homework and pore over the choices and, you know, and decide who I would vote for theoretically.
Right.
But I will tell you that, you know, I tend to be a small hall person. I tend to be someone who wants to reserve this honor for the greatest of the great and someone who, you know, sort of decries the expansion of the Hall of Fame that's gone on in the past few years. You know, when someone like when Harold Baines got you know, and I covered Harold Baines at the Post, and I liked him a lot. He's just not a Hall of Famer in my eyes. So I tend to be someone who is very picky about who. Mariano Rivera was a no-brainer. I mean, clearly voted for him. I would have had to have done a lot more probing research about Edgar Martinez, Mike Messina, and even Roy Halliday.
Okay. On base, when you see those four guys, what did you think of their careers? And I'm not saying whether they're Hall of Fame worthy or not, but what did you think of their four careers when you actually did see them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, Halliday obviously, you know, did not have the long career. He didn't really break in as a proven big leaguer until he was 25 years old. He didn't pitch much beyond 35. He barely won 200 games. I mean, his kind of career 25, 30 years ago, I think, would not have gotten into the Hall of Fame. He didn't have the magical numbers like the 3,000 strikeouts, the 300 wins, and nor did Messina, for that matter, with the wins. But, you know, times have changed, and I think that's what this election showed more than anything else. You know, the two guys at the top of the ballot, Rivera and Edgar Martinez, are essentially specialists. Rivera pitched one inning a game basically three or four times a week. Edgar Martinez did not play any defense, at least after the age of, you know, 27 or 28. He was a DH only from that point on. So I think what's going on with the Hall of Fame is there's been a lot more openness and to consider candidates who are not the usual suspects, starting pitchers who won 300 games and hitters who hit 500 homers. You know, the voters are willing to look at all kinds of candidates now.
In fact, yeah, I remember Pro Football Hall of Fame, and one of the voters, Jack Ham's my broadcast partner for Penn State football, and one of the voters for the Hall of Fame ran into Jack. Well, he actually came into the booth. We were getting ready to do a game. And he said, I want to ask you, he says, Ray Guy's name's going to come up. So there's that specialist you're talking about, Dave, a punter. And he said, Jack, do you think Ray Guy is a Hall of Famer? Jack Ham said, absolutely he's a Hall of Famer. So does this open up the door? For example, David Ortiz is a specialist. He's not up for a few years. But does this open the door to you in your mind that they're going to open the door more for specialists who are at least above and beyond?
I think it will. You know, Ortiz is going to be a very interesting case because, of course, he has been, you know, tainted by the steroids scandal.
The 2003 test.
Correct. So, you know, voters to this point have been very, you know, even to this day, even to yesterday's results, unwilling to vote in anybody who has been sort of proven or beyond a reasonable doubt suspected of being a PED user. That goes for Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. It goes for Manny Ramirez, who barely registered on the votes yesterday. It goes for Sammy Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro, and Ortiz is going to be a curious case because even though he was caught up in the PED scandal, it was a very it came out through the 2003 testing, which was supposed to be random and unnamed. He is very likable. Writers loved him. I loved talking to him. He was very insightful and congenial, just a great guy. So he's going to be an interesting test case to see if, over time, PED suspects are going to get into the Hall of Fame. And I think probably the answer is yes.
Does it help him that the fact that once the collective bargaining agreement was agreed to on testing, that he was negative every time?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy who did not face MLB sanctions from PED use. He was not, so that is a big distinction. I mean, there are guys in the Hall of Fame right now who I'm pretty sure use steroids. I don't want to name names,
sure.
But they happened to skate through because they had the good fortune of not having their dealer get busted in the same way that Balco happened. So, right. It's sort of arbitrary, and Ortiz, I think, is going to benefit from that.
Okay, so I want to get to Bonds and Clemens for a moment. Neither one could clear the 60% barrier when it was all said and done. Mm-hmm. How do you view that? Because obviously they put together incredible stuff before the suspicions were about whether they were using it or not. I think I'll be careful my wording here. So how do you feel about that line as you view it?
Well, we're looking at a situation where I'm pretty certain there are guys already in the Hall of Fame who were steroid users. So are we keeping out Bonds and Clemens because they had the misfortune of having their dealers or their sources busted? Or are we going to throw a blanket no over anybody who we suspect even an iota of using steroids? So to me, if it's impossible to separate, the 100% certain users from the 75% certain users to the 50 to the 25, I have to just consider them all on the basis of their record. And Bonds is the greatest hitter I've ever seen, the greatest player I've ever seen, arguably the greatest player in history, and the same is true of Roger Clemens as a pitcher. And so I don't think I could keep them out of Cooperstown based on who was already in.
Right. I hope you don't mind if I ask a couple of general baseball questions, because obviously one of them goes toward Washington, obviously, and that's about Harper. I'll get to that in a moment. When you look at – this is the second year in a row that free agent movement has been very slow. And it took a long time, for example, before J.D. Martinez was signed a year ago. How are you viewing that, especially with the collective bargaining agreement on the horizon in a couple of years?
Well, there's no question that something is going on and that teams are all acting roughly the same way, which is staying away from older players, from veterans who are 30 and above, staying away from long-term deals. My suspicion is not that it's collusion in the traditional sense of owners getting together and saying let's do this nefarious means of tamping down salaries. What it is a sort of groupthink among similar GMs who are now all coming from Ivy League schools, and they're coming out of math degrees and economics, and they're smart and they're almost too smart for their own good, but they no longer find it an efficient use of resources to make 8 or 10 year contracts for $200 or $300 million with some of the best players in the game, and that's what you're seeing. And it's unfortunate for the players who have come through the system and have expected their payday to be there at the end of their 6 years, but that's just the way it is now in baseball.
Essentially, Dave, there is no salary cap, but let's face it, the $206 million threshold on the luxury tax is an artificial, but albeit real, salary cap, I think, for a lot of teams.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, players, teams are treating it as such. They don't want to pay a tax. And talk about an inefficient use of resources, to spend millions on a tax bill that goes to line the pockets of other teams. So, yeah, teams are absolutely treating it as a de facto salary cap.
Is, do you think, loosely, that the contracts of Albert Pujols with the Angels and Robinson Cano when he signed with the Mariners are having an influence over the groupthink that you're discussing?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that, you know, it's hard to sit here and pick out a 8 or 10 year contract that was good for the team in the end. I mean, A-Rod, on his original deal with the Rangers, he produced. I mean, he put up MVP numbers, but they traded him to the Yankees after 3 years because it was no longer where he couldn't make them win. Cano, you know, 5 years into that deal is popped for PED use. Albert Pujols is a shell of what he used to be, and they still have a few more years to pay him. He's hamstrung their payroll. Jason Hayward, you know, we could go on with these. You know, I mean, in Washington, you know, Max Scherzer got a 7-year contract for $210 million. It was the second or third largest ever for a pitcher at the time. And I have to say that one has worked out pretty well. But for position players and with the exception of maybe Scherzer for pitchers, I mean, it's just hard to find one of those that has worked well for teams.
All right, so let's now get to Bryce Harper. You know, obviously – done with the Nationals doesn't mean he could never re-sign with them. How do you view the Harper situation, and realistically, what do you see as his options?
Well, it is very interesting. You know, I was guilty of this as much as anybody, but we all sort of saw this thing going into record numbers. I mean, a year ago, I mean, I remember the number $400 million floating out there, and some people even saying, "What about $500 million?" You know, it seems pretty clear he's not going to come close to those numbers. You know, at this point, the market is very ill-defined, or I don't want to say non-existent, because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But at least publicly, you hear about the White Sox, you hear about the Phillies. That's about it at this point. I still think there's a chance he could wind up back with the Nationals, because they did make a $300 million offer to him in September. They say it's no longer on the table, but I think if it came down to it, they would not let him walk away, particularly to an NL East rival like Philadelphia, over, you know, $10 or $20 million, if that's what it came down to, that they would put that offer back on the table, or maybe even sweeten it in order to keep him. I don't know that for sure, but I think there's still a pathway for him to wind up in Washington. Otherwise, you know, at this point, it looks like Phillies or White Sox. And for my money, I mean, you can never count out the Yankees, no matter how loaded they seem to be and no matter how, you know, much they say they're out of it. The thought of Bryce Harper, you know, hitting to right field at Yankee Stadium is just too tantalizing to rule out until he signs somewhere else.
How have the fans in Washington played this out?
Yeah, this is interesting, because it's not the way you would imagine, where there's this outcry and people, you know, begging the Nats to re-sign them. There's a big split among the fan base. You know, fan bases are smart now, too. If GMs are smarter than ever, fans are the same way. And I think a lot of fans that I hear from email and Twitter are saying, you know, spend that $30 or $40 million a year that you're going to pay to Harper on a fifth starter and, you know, a second baseman or a catcher, or, you know, that allocate those dollars somewhere else and make yourself stronger. So, you know, there are people who want him back, but there's also people who are fine with him leaving.
I'll never forget with Albert Pujols, they were talking about, quote, the hometown discount with him with the Cardinals, which would have been 10 years, $225 million. I think he signed for 10, 240 with the Angels, I think, in the end. And the Cardinals pulled it off the table, and the reason they pulled it off the table is, look, we can get three players for this kind of money. And I think that's now the mindset among most people out there in baseball. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, it's all about efficiency. That is the buzzword that drives front offices now, is efficiency. And is it more efficient to allocate, you know, $30 million to a guy well into his 30s when you're going to get a decline, or, you know, to keep spreading that money around on shorter deals with players to players in their prime? And I think that's what you're seeing happening across the market right now.
Glad we got a chance to talk about this part. This that last part was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, in baseball, you're sitting like the fun part is like, do we allocate 17% to one guy out of my 206?
Right.
And again, that percentage, when you're allocating 17% on one person, I think that brings it into focus as to what you're allocating here for a person on a 25-man team. You know, yeah, obviously it's more than 25, but just using base numbers, that, I think that has to be brought into play.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I think it's been proven. I think, you know, the Rangers with A-Rod were the original experiment in paying, you know, a quarter of your overall payroll to one. And I think that over the years, it's essentially been proven that that's not an optimum way to win. And unfortunately, you know, you're seeing, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado paying for the sins of previous mistakes.
Yeah. Well, J.D. Martinez, remember what the number was they thought he was going to get? He ended up getting about half that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, on a shorter deal for five years instead of seven or eight. And, you know, then the Red Sox won the World Series with him. You know, I mean, it worked out really well for the Red Sox. And I guess it worked out for J.D. as well. I mean, you know, he got his ring. He put up the numbers. He's certainly not crying poor.
No, he did not take a vow of poverty either.
Right.
He just didn't get as much as he thought he might be getting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, and for Dave, for you and me, that's always been the problem. We don't quite get as much as we think.
Ain't that the truth?
I just spoke for everybody in the audience. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time. That was great conversation. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Old Chris Trapasso from CBSSports.com. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, there will be football this weekend. It's the Pro Bowl, but there's also football Saturday with the Senior Bowl, the 70th annual Senior Bowl taking place in Mobile, Alabama. We'll talk with Chris Trapasso of CBSSports.com, who will join us in the next half hour from Mobile, and we'll get updates on everything he's seen down there, including Trace McSorley and Amani Oruwariye. Then Mark Wogenrich of the Allentown Morning Calls also down there, and we'll zero in the final half hour on Trace and Amani at the Senior Bowl. But we'll get a general overview from Chris first, and then we'll shift over to Mark in the final half hour. So a lot of Senior Bowl coverage coming up in the next hour of the show. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Now, Sunbury Motors, best product. They want to move 1,000 new Fords this year, and they have great products, an awesome sales staff, and the service department is second to none. I mean, the service department is indeed second to none. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have Chad Hershberger alongside today. Sean will return tomorrow. King's here tomorrow with picks. I don't know what we're picking this weekend, but that's why Sean's the producer. I guess we'll all find out together.
You can pick what the king has for supper, maybe.
Jeez, I hope not.